Hi, everybody. Hopefully this is working. Welcome. I'm just going to give it a couple seconds for some people to jump on here. And I am a minute or two early, but I wanted to make sure that I got in on the live and got everything situated. I have never broadcast myself to someone else's page, so I just wanted to make sure I was doing it correctly. And Kathy is here to assist. So that is fantastic. Kathy, so great to be with you. And Jen's here. Yay. I'm so excited. All right. We got a party started already. I just cannot tell you guys how thrilled I am to be here doing this. I couldn't sleep last night. I'm like a little kid in a candy store. So first of all, thank you to Corinne and Kathy for asking me to do this and for inviting me. I consider it quite an honor. And I'm just thrilled to be with all of you today and to help and to share during this uncertain time. My eyes water a lot. I have a couple big bright lights, so bear with me here. Let's start out. I want to make this totally interactive. And so I'd love to know where you guys are joining from and how many kids you have and what ages they are. So if you just pop that into the chat, I do like to be interactive on my Facebook Lives. And while we're getting settled in, I'm just going to give you a couple bullet points about myself. Like, who the heck is this Lisa Smith, and why does she call herself the peaceful parent, and why is she going to tell me why my kids melt down? So let's start there. So again, I'm Lisa Smith. I've been in PNP for, I don't even know how long, about a year and a half. I've lost 20 pounds and 20 more to go. And I'm part of the amazing accountability group called Grown Ass Women, with Jen Nab and Amy Jenkins. They are just friggin' awesome women, and I adore them. They are, we need a word. I don't even know. They're like sisters and best friends and older sisters and kick my butt and mentors, and I love them. So let me just say that up front. So anyway, I'm Lisa Smith. I have a 15-year-old son. I've been married 30 years, and we call my son a full contact sport. He's about as strong-willed as they come. And I had a really crazy childhood and swore that if I ever became a parent, I would not repeat the mistakes that were made. And 14 years into my marriage, I was a very successful medical device executive, and a venture capitalist. I co-founded my own venture capital firm. We put $25 million to work, and life was great. And I had this son. I loved him more than anything, still do. And he turned about three, and I realized that I was a dominant parent. I was angry, frustrated, reactive all the time. Give me some hearts if you can relate to that. I was angry, and he was three. Like, what was there to be angry about? But I just, like, I was dominant. I was bossy. I snapped all the time. I went to bed every night. I felt like the world's worst parent. I would commit every morning like a diet. Today's the day I'm not going to yell. And by 5:30, I was yelling or drinking Chardonnay and eating cheese and crackers. Like that little meme where the person's stuffing it all down their face. And I looked around. Everybody else seemed to be doing it right. And I couldn't figure out. I just couldn't figure out how to get there. Like, why was I repeating the same mistakes? Why was I so reactive? And one day when my son was about four, I was yelling at him. He was yelling at me. I was yelling at him for yelling at me. And it hit me like, girl, you're repeating these mistakes. You're headed down that path. I have no relationship today with my father by my choice because of the dominant parenting that I experienced and the way he treated me. And it scared me. Like, if this is where we're at today, where are we going to be in 20 years? I don't want that. So I set about, you know, much like many of us set about to find PNP. And Corinne and Kathy and the team, I set about to find a better way. And conscious parenting, which I call peaceful parenting, fell in my lap. And I learned all kinds of tools. Some I'm going to share with you today. I learned how to parent in a way that creates connection. Everybody feels heard. There's maximum cooperation. I don't yell anymore. I don't punish. I don't threaten. I don't manipulate. I don't get frustrated and angry. I don't need Chardonnay as a tool in my parenting anymore. And so I ended up leaving my venture capital firm and becoming a parent coach. And now I work with parents all over the world. I've worked with thousands of parents. I've written a book called The Angry Parent. I help people move from threatening, punishing, and yelling into peaceful leaders within their households. And I help them maximize cooperation, particularly with strong-willed kids, but with all children at any age. And I help parents go to bed at night. What I really do is I help parents go to bed at night and feel good about their parenting, even if there were meltdowns that day. So that's a little bit about me. I don't know if you guys are making comments in the chat, but I wanted to know how old your kids were. But none of it's showing up. So hopefully we can have some interaction. All righty. So here's what I'm going to tell you about today. I am going to tell you about why your kids melt down. I promise you it's not what you think and what to do about it. And the solution is probably not what you think either. So my goal today is to blow your mind, like give you some new stuff to ponder, and give you some new tools that you've never thought of. And hopefully there are tools that as soon as you get off the Facebook Live or stop listening to this recording that you're going to put to work right away in your family that are going to make a ginormous difference. So that is my goal today. And before I forget, I also have a guide for everybody. It's called Peaceful Parenting During Uncertain Times. This is what it looks like. I put it together. We launched it to my team, to my people, my list last week. And Kathy is going to load this. Someone is going to load this in the PNP tribe and make it available to everybody. It's free. It's about 20 pages and it's full of articles that are designed to give you tools and tips to use in your parenting right now while we're engaged in this uncertain time. That's what I keep calling it. I sort of refuse to keep using the word coronavirus and I don't like using negative words. So I'm just calling it during this uncertain time. That makes me feel really comfortable. So, okay. Kathy, can you just write a comment in the chat box for me? I'm just curious if no one's commenting or if for some reason I'm not getting the comments. So I don't know what's going on there, but I wanted this to be somewhat interactive and give people a chance to ask questions. So I don't know why. Let's see. Let me see if I can make a comment. Okay. So I was able to make a comment. All right. Moving on. We'll get that worked out. It's challenging to do a Facebook Live and tech at the same time. All right. So here we go. We're going to dig into the meat here. So here's what I want you to know. All kids at all times are just trying to get their needs met. Now, the truth of the matter is all human beings at all times are trying to get their needs met. But for the sake of today's conversation, we're going to focus on kids. So all kids at all times are just trying to get their needs met. That is their entire motivation. And when needs are met and not met, feelings erupt. And, you know, we have thoughts mixed in there too. But I'm going to talk about feelings and needs. All kids at all times are trying to get their needs met. And there are some basic needs that children have, and they're, we call them the 5 A's and the C. They're affection, attention, autonomy, acceptance, appreciation, and connection. You don't really need to write them down, and I'm happy to post them later for everybody. But these are autonomy. Am I seen as I am? Appreciation. Am I unique in my family and still loved? Do I get the affection that I need? Do I get the connection that I need? And so what happens is when behaviors come from feelings and needs not being met. So let me say it a different way. When we have feelings and needs and they're not met, then we have explosive behavior. And this is never more true as for children because the prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until about the age of 25. Okay. And so kids are not capable of adult behavior. They're not capable. Most of them are not capable of tuning into what's going on inside and then expressing it in an adult-like way. I didn't like when you said that. I'd like to have some alone time. I'd like my own toys right now, right? So what happens is when they have unmet needs, it ends up coming out as, sorry, hold on. I'm trying to look at the comments. I'm not doing a very good job here. Sorry. I've never done this before. So I've done Facebook Lives, but not on someone else's page, and it's prohibiting me from seeing your comments. So when kids have explosions, when they have storms, I call everything meltdown, screaming, yelling, hitting, talking back, eye rolling, stomping feet, slamming doors. I put that all in a category called storming. And when kids are storming, it's because underneath the storm is an unmet feeling and need. And what most of us do is we focus on the storm. And what I want to teach you to do or share with you by the end of our time together today is to recognize that what we really need to do is go underneath the storm to the feelings and needs. Because if we solve for the feelings and needs, if you hear me say nothing else today, if we solve for the feelings and needs, the storming will take care of itself. The storming is an expression of unmet feelings and needs. Hopefully that just blew your mind. I will confess to you, before I learned this, I had no idea. I didn't know this is what was going on. I thought my son was doing things to me. He's being difficult. I just got on the phone and now he has to bother me. He's being obstinate. He's being difficult. He's being challenging. She's being a brat. What are some other things we think? I can't believe she's doing this again. Why does she always do this to me? These are thoughts we think about our children. And we do this in response typically to the storming because we're focused on the storming. Okay, bear with me just one second here. I do want to see what you guys are saying in the comments because I really believe that that's going to be helpful. So let me just see here if I can figure out how to get to PNP, which of course I can't. All right, so so they're storming because they have unmet feelings and needs. Are you with me so far? And then we come along and we start judging. We look at their behavior. They're melting down. And I don't know if there's a time this is any more pertinent than right now. Because, you know, for most children, what's happened, I wish that I could share this with every parent in the world. What's happened for most kids, unless they're being homeschooled or unless they're, you know, used to staying at home with mom, Maybe you have a 2- and a 3-year-old and they're used to being home. But if they've been going to school or daycare, what's happened is the best parts of school have been stripped away from our children. And what they're left with is the worst parts. Okay, so imagine that you go to work every day and all the things that you really don't like about your job, they're like, surprise, Jennifer, you're going to do the crappy things all day, every day. And all the good stuff, like going to lunch with your friends or coaching people or whatever you really love. Nope, that's gone, girl. You're just getting the shitty parts of your job, right? That's what's happened to our kids. They don't get to go to school. They don't get to move around. They don't get to socialize. Lunch is gone. Recess is gone. Gym is gone. Their favorite subject might not be being taught in the same way. And they're left with just the schoolwork, which is really the crappiest part. So their feelings, they have a lot of unmet needs right now. And they have a lot of feelings. And because they have underdeveloped brains, they're not even understanding what they're feeling. You know, they're not like most adults who are connecting all the dots. I mean, not that many adults are great at that either, but let's assume for a moment they are. Let's assume you're great at connecting the dots. Like I'm sitting in tons of disappointment right now. I had all these things planned. Family was coming to visit. My son was going to be on a national traveling basketball team. Like we had all these trips planned. I had a couple. I'm totally disappointed. Sitting with it all day. I get it. My son is not necessarily great at connecting the dots. Actually, he is because we've been doing this for a while, but I'm just assuming for the sake of this. So there's a lot of feelings going on and there's a lot of storming right now, a lot for kids. And what I want you to see is there's unmet needs. Now, I'm not talking about ice cream for breakfast. Okay, that's not a need. That's a want. And I'm not talking about being on an iPad 24/7. Again, a need. And I'm not trying to turn everybody into permissive parents where you allow your kid, you know, to have whatever they want. And it is not your job to fulfill necessarily every need they have. It is your job to identify the needs and help them work through them or help them understand that's a need that can't be met right now. All right. You with me? So our kids are speaking. So here's the thing. Here's why it's important to do what I call scuba dive and go down under the needs. If we don't, what happens as parents is we start judging our kids. We look at them, we go, oh my God, another meltdown. Are you kidding me? I need to get some work done, or I just got on the phone with my boss and here comes my son in the room. I told him not to come in the room. I can't believe he's doing this to me. She's so difficult. Why does she have to do that all the time? All right. So the first problem is we start judging our kids, which doesn't feel good. But then the second problem is that judgment that we have leads to us getting triggered. And triggering is where we're going to start storming, right? So it's called alarm state. So our judgment pushes us into alarm state. So when an alarm state child meets an alarm state kid, there's going to be an explosion 100% of the time. Or let me say it another way. When a storming child, there's going to be an explosion 100% of the time. And many of us are experiencing this all day right now because of the uncertain time. And so what I really want you to know is that it doesn't have to be that way. You can get curious, not furious. You can talk to yourself. You can remember. Here's the saying I want you to remember. My kid isn't giving me a hard time. They're having a hard time. They're struggling right now. And here's what else I want you to know. Storming is speaking the language of help. Okay, this is really important. So really listen to this. When our kids are storming because they have an underdeveloped brain, what they're saying to us is, help me. I don't know what to do. If I knew what to do, I would have done it already. If I knew what was wrong, I would articulate it to you. I would fix it. So the storming is a request for help. And the good news is they're comfortable enough to storm in front of you. You've created an environment where they can come to you and say, 911, help me. I don't know how to help myself, or I would have done it already. Please help me. Please help me figure this out. Something's going on inside and I'm agitated and I don't know what. Please help me. That's the language of storming for our children. And if we stay out of judgment, we can hear that and we can help them. If not in the moment, later, we can go back and say, what was going on for you? What was happening? Let's figure it out so that we can come up with a solution for next time. Remember when you first brought your child home from the hospital? Such a scary time, right? But after a couple weeks, you learn their cries. You learn the cry for, I have a poopy diaper. I need some cuddling. I'm hungry. I have gas. Or maybe there was that continuous cry of colic, right? Or fussy baby. You learned the cries. The storming is the same thing. A lot of times when our kids start to talk, our brain thinks, oh, they're speaking now. I can drop being a detective. I don't need to be Columbo anymore. We're never as good, I'm dating myself here, but we're never as good of Columbos as when we first bring those babies home and we learn all of those cries, right? And then we stop being Columbo. But what I want you to do is I really want you to become Columbo, because if you can learn the storming, why are they storming? If you can stay out of judgment and you can get what I've coined the phrase, get curious, not furious. If I could make one of those plastic bands and mail it to every one of you, I would totally do it. Because curious, not furious, right? Stay curious. It encourages us to go down underneath the behavior to the feelings and needs. And if you go underneath the behavior to the feelings and needs and you solve, I promise you this, I guarantee it. If you go underneath and you solve for the feelings and needs, the behavior will take care of itself. Right? So if you've got a lot of conflict in your home, your kids are fighting all the time, or you've got a grumpy kid, or your daughter's constantly like on an emotional roller coaster, don't focus on the behavior. Focus on the feelings and needs. And you can do that. If you can focus on the feelings and needs and solve for it, the behavior will permanently take care of itself. The problem with just working on the behavior is it's temporary. Because if I yell at you or I dominate you or I get you to stop crying, underneath that there's still an unmet need. Yeah, I think of unsolved feelings and needs as like a beach ball, right? If you take a beach ball into a swimming pool, I live in Arizona, so we love our swimming pools here. If you take a beach ball into a swimming pool and you hold it down underwater, think about that as the feelings and needs, right? If you hold it down underwater for an extended period of time and you let go, what happens? It comes up with a lot of velocity. It comes up with force. This is what happens with feelings and needs with our children because of their underdeveloped brains. If you don't go down to the feelings and needs, but you solve for the behavior, then it's temporary. So if you have two kids that are fighting all the time, and all you're doing is breaking up the fights and telling them, stop it. I hate when you do that. I can't handle that. Right now, quit your fighting. Well, you haven't found out what's going on. So you turn your back and an hour later, they're right back to it. Anybody experience this? Give me some hearts if you do. The problem is that the more that we do this, we're just, sorry, I'm reading some of the comments. We're just, Kathy said, this is so good. Yeah. Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate that. And Jennifer said, curious, not furious, sticky note. Awesome. Yes, 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 yes. So we have to go deep. All right, let's move on. Let me talk to the solution part of it. You may be sitting there going, hey, great, Lisa. Well done. I get it. But what do I do about it? How do I solve this problem? So I've got three things for you that I want you to focus on. And I have made myself a little cheat sheet. And if you guys think this would be helpful, I can go in when we're done here into the comments, into the Facebook Live, and I'll put the solutions and all my notes as a comment in there so you can see it. So if you want me to do that, just say yes, please. And we'll get that done. Because I would rather you listen than take notes and just come and be present with me, and then I can give you the information later. So I have three things that I want you to do to help you become a scuba diver instead of a snorkeler, right? So think of that image, right? Snorkeling, you just stay on the water. And I mean, I love to snorkel, but you know, you're not really getting to see all the sea life going on. You're only seeing what's on the surface and based on your vision, which at this point, I wouldn't be seeing very much. I can't see very far away. I'm that girl that, you know, like is at the mall and someone's waving to me and I'm like, who is that? I'm waving back, but I have no idea who it is. So snorkeling is not that fun because I can't see very deep, right? This is the image of us just focusing on the behavior. But what I want you to do is transition from a snorkeler to a scuba diver, where you've got the full tank on, you're full of empathy, you're not judging your kids, and you're wondering what's going on, and you're digging down deep into what is going on at any age, okay? And you're becoming a detective, and you're really seeing all the sea life that's happening down there. So here are my three suggested tips for doing this. So the first one is, you cannot take your kids' behavior personally. You can't. I listen to pretty much, I feel like I listen to every coaching call. And anytime with Corinne and Kathy and Betsy and MJ, and I feel like anytime parenting comes up, the number one thing I'm like, oh, I want everybody to do, don't take your kids' behavior personally. This is how we get triggered. Again, remember the motto, they're having a hard time. She's having a hard time. She's not giving me a hard time. So often our brain wants to take all of this personally, and it gets us triggered. And remember, storming child, so they come at us storming. They're speaking the language of help. Storming child, we take it personally, we get triggered. Storming parent, explosion 100% of the time. 100% of the time, when a storming child meets a storming parent, there will be an explosion. So you have to remember and work at not taking it personally. You have to see them as a separate person. You have to look at, again, you could do a thought model, a thought download, or you could write your thoughts out. Why am I taking this personally? Am I embarrassed? Is my kid screaming at me at McDonald's? Am I getting embarrassed by this? Am I frustrated because I told her we were going to leave in 5 minutes and now she won't go put her shoes on? Do I think that every morning she's not putting her shoes on for school because she wants to do this to me? Am I frustrated right now because yesterday we made a schedule and she's not following it? Why won't she follow the schedule? We made the schedule for school. What is going on? Right? These are the things. We take our kids' behavior personally. They're not doing it to us. I promise you, they don't even have the mental capacity. I have this one client who, when we first started working together, she has a three-year-old, and she used to tell me that her three-year-old likes to manipulate her. I'm like, listen, a three-year-old doesn't have the skills to manipulate a parent. I know it feels like it in the heat of the moment, but they don't. I've studied the brain science of a child. The prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until the age of 25. Now, that doesn't mean that a 16-year-old can't try to do things to get their way. I'm not saying that. But I promise you that a three-year-old does not have the capacity or the ability to manipulate. What they're doing is they're trying to get their needs met. And they're throwing a bunch of stuff against the wall. And they're paying attention to what works. Their whole goal is to try on a bunch of behaviors to see what meets their needs. Now, if you're, let me give you an example of this. If you're busy all the time, remember I said at the beginning, kids are trying to get their needs met. And maybe one of their needs is affection and attention. And you're busy. Man, you got a lot going on. You're using this time to clean out drawers and make cookies and call every relative you have. And you got work going on. And you're trying to stick to a school schedule. And like, you're a busy person. And your kids need affection and attention. Okay? And let's say you have a 7 and a 9-year-old, and they're both boys. And one day, and the 7-year-old is craving a lot of attention right now and a lot of affection. Maybe not long periods of time, but lots of little check-ins, quality over quantity. And you have been busy for like 3 hours doing something, right? And all of a sudden, he hits his brother or pokes at him or gets into a big fight. And all of a sudden, the two boys, they're screaming and they're crying and they're running into the bedroom where you're cleaning out the bathroom cabinet. You know, you've got your head stuck in the bathroom cabinet. You're in there checking expiration dates and throwing old makeup away and wondering why you bought that nail polish that you never used, right? And they come screaming in and they're both crying and they're upset. And you turn around and you're like, what is going on? What are you guys doing? Why are you fighting? What is happening? Well, your little guy just got attention. And his brain just went ding, 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 ding. Little kids don't understand negative from positive attention. Their brain doesn't delineate the two. They just know they got their need met. Oh, and their subconscious brain says, oh, well, that worked. Let me file that away for next time. Oh, I got attention. Okay, this must be how we do it in this family. We fight. Okay, good to know. So now, 2 days later, you're in the kitchen baking up a storm or doing something else, and he's wanting some attention. His brain has started a neural, just go over and poke at my brother. That certainly seemed to work last time. And every time it works, they get a reinforcement. They're like, oh, okay, this is how we do it in this family. They don't know, they don't have the ability to see and that fighting is causing problems. They don't have a developed prefrontal cortex. So they can't see next steps like, oh, I shouldn't do that. That bothers my mom. It hurts my brother's feelings. They don't have the capacity for this. They're just striving to get their needs met. I like to say the kids, like, they throw a bunch of shit against the wall to see what sticks. And whatever sticks, their brain goes, okay, let's file that away. Let's create a pattern for that. And so I want you to not take your kids' behavior personally. That was step number one. And solution number two is to go underneath the behavior to the feelings and needs, right? I've mentioned this a gazillion times. If you solve for the feelings and needs, the behavior will take care of itself. And if you don't focus on the behavior and you solve, so maybe in that moment when those, your head's in the, you know, stuck in the cabinet, you ask them what's going on. You don't ask them, why are you fighting? What was going on right before you were fighting? Maybe you take him individually and you say, hey, James, what was going on, buddy? And he's like, I don't know. And you're like, well, let's talk it through. What are you needing? And maybe somehow together you figure out that he was getting bored or he needed some attention or he didn't know what to do with himself. And you say, okay, you know what, buddy? Let's not create a fight. If you need attention, come and ask me for it. I'll try to check in with you, but come and ask me for attention. I totally trained my son when he was little. Don't act up. Just come and ask me. he'd come in and he'd be like, Mom, I need some attention. All right, game on. I'd drop what I was doing if I could, and I'd give him some attention. Because that's the real thing that needs to be solved here are the feelings and needs. The behavior is just the roadmap to the feelings and needs. Or said another way, it's the symptom to the disease. And, you know, sometimes we treat the symptoms, but what we really want to treat is the disease. Not that our kids are a disease, but okay. Let's see what else we have going. All right, so that's number one, don't take it personally. Number two is become Columbo. You know, I love that, I don't know, you guys may not know who Columbo was, but I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandma loved Columbo, and we used to watch it, and I just remember that he had on like this trench coat, and he would show up at the scene of the crime with his cigarette hanging out and his scruffy beard, and he would focus on the crime, but he would also like assess the whole situation. Like, what are all the factors? And this is what I want you to put your energy into. Instead of judging and getting upset and focusing on the behavior, I really want you to become a detective. Like, okay, when do they eat? What's going on? What are the circumstances? What do I think they're needing? What do they think they're needing? As a byproduct of this, if you focus on this over time, what you're doing is you're turning on the internal compass within your kids. And I promise you, I see this in my 15-year-old now. I see the fruits of my labor. You know, he'll tell me like, Mom, I'm going to be difficult today. And I'm like, why? Well, I'm anxious. I'm nervous about blah, blah, blah. And you know that when I get nervous, I'm difficult. So I'm just giving you a heads up. I'm like, okay, thank you. I didn't realize that was going on inside. Or he'll tell me, you know, he's getting better and better and better at linking his feelings and needs with his behavior, because we spend a lot of time connecting the dots. So we can turn on the internal compass of our children over time if we practice this enough, right? So this is one of the byproducts of this. And again, if you go in Columbo mode, particularly if your kids are really little, like they're not, you know, you're gonna ask them, what do you need? You can't ask a four-year-old, what do you need? And they're like, oh, well, Mommy, I need some appreciation and some autonomy. You know, they're not going to be able to do that. So you're going to have to really play detective. Because in a crime scene, Columbo, no one person was able to step forward and say, well, you see, this is what happened. He had to gather a little piece from every person, the facts and all the pieces of information that each person had to solve what was going on. And this is what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to become observant, whether it's a teenager, a college student. I was in one of the subgroups last night, and I was saying, I really love the subgroup, the foodie group, because I'm a foodie. And I posted, I can't wait to talk to you guys today. And someone in there, I can't remember who, I think it was Jean, said that that she has a college student that just got home from college and, you know, is having really big storms right now. And I get it. And I think the solution, even with college kids, is to ask them, hey, what's going on for you? How are you feeling? Tell me more. I'd like to know what, you know, what the secret is, the secret sauce, the secret question, if you will, is you want to ask people what was going on for them right before the storm? So right before you had that outburst, right before you had that meltdown, what was going on for you? Oh, well, I just got a note from, you know, my friend that they're not coming this weekend to visit. Or I just found out that we have a test tomorrow. I didn't think we were going to have any tests while we were doing this online learning. Or I forgot to turn in a homework assignment. Or I'm bored. Or I miss my friends. I mean, my 15-year-old is really struggling with this isolation from physically seeing his friends and also from his sporting activities. The school part is not necessarily a problem, but the isolation and for an unknown period of time and the lack of physical activity is really, he's struggling with it. And he, you know, sometimes storms, and we talk about what's going on and what are alternative things he can do that will help him work all that cortisol out of his body. So often, I could go in a million places. I could talk to you guys for 10 hours. I could be on this Facebook Live. So I have to edit myself a little bit because I have so much great stuff to share. But the storming most often happens because we've had a buildup of cortisol, that agitating hormone in our body, and we need to express it. It's a very short-acting hormone. And so the storming is a result of, like, the balloon is filled up with air and some air needs to come out. And so another thing you can do is talk to your kids about alternatives. If they're storming in a way that doesn't work for you, like they're fighting or they're yelling or they're stomping around, come up with a game plan together. Like, hey, I want you to be able to storm. I'd just like you to do it in a way that the work doesn't, you know, that doesn't cause problems. So, like, my son's allowed to slam his door, go in his room and slam his door and scream at the top of his lungs. And he does it. But what he's not allowed to do is scream at me. That's a no-go for me. We have a limit around that. So maybe your kids, you know, they're not, you want them, instead of fighting, you could come up with some alternative things they could do. They could run around the house screaming and, you know, flailing their arms. They could do push-ups. They could go out in the backyard and scream at the top of their lungs. And you're going to have to get over being embarrassed by the neighbors, right? Because they need something. We don't want to suppress the storming. We want to help them storm in a way that works for them. And then at the same time, figure out the feelings and needs to prevent future storms. Okay. Sound good? All right. The third solution. Now, this is a big one. And this is going to hit you guys right here. So be prepared, because this is a tough one to talk about. And I might even get a little teary-eyed talking about it. I'm a little overwhelmed at the moment. So the third thing I want you to consider when working on your kids' meltdowns is most of our kids, however they're expressing their storms, guess who they learned it from? They learned it from us. And this is just the cold, hard truth. So we model how to behave in times of stress for our children. Corinne uses the word mirroring. We can use the two words interchangeably, so I'll try to use the word mirroring. Well, I'm going to use the word modeling because we show our kids. We model for our children. Here's what we do. Many times we're unconscious when we're doing it, but we're saying, hey, in this family, in times of stress, this is how you behave. This is your behavior. When you have unmet needs, this is your behavior. Whether it's yelling or arguing or being passive aggressive, going in the other room and slamming the door, we show our kids how to behave. And oftentimes, what we're showing them is what was showed to us. And this was my frustration as a parent, right? I was yelled at all the time. It's ridiculous. I like to say, if yelling were an Olympic sport, I would come from a dynasty of gold medalists. That's my saying, right? We were professional yellers. I mean, I grew up in a household where yelling is all that happened. And I kid you not, from the age of 12 on, I sat up every morning in my bed, in my strawberry comforter, and I life coached myself before I even knew what coaching was. Because I sat up every morning in my bed and I said to myself, when I opened my eyes, talk about manifesting, I said, I will not be my mother and I will not be my father. And I wasn't. I was successful. I was kind. I had productive relationships. I went to college. I treated people well. And then I became a parent and I started yelling at my kid and I was devastated because I was like my parents. This was the one area where I was repeating the patterns. And this is why most of us are doing it. 99% of the time when I dig in with my clients, either one-on-one or in group settings, most of us are just following the neural pathways that were set for us when we were kids, because we have had underdeveloped brains. And so what we're doing is we're modeling for our kids how we behave in this family in times of stress. And then when they do it, we get mad at them, right? And all our kids are good learners. I mean, they're outstanding learners because they're paying attention. They are freaking awake at the wheel. Hashtag awake at the wheel. They are. And they're good learners. They don't know. They're not coming. Most of them are not coming up with this stuff on their own. They're learning from us. And so when they get stressed, they're fighting or yelling or slamming doors or screaming or calling people names. And all it is they're just showing us, they're modeling back our behavior that we showed them. And to make it worse, this is where things get a little cray-cray. If our kids are, so I call all of that, you know, violence. It's a hard word to use, but it's attention getting. So if we're showing our kids violence, if we're yelling at them, if we're swatting them on the butt, right? Let's say we're swatting our kids on the butt and we're yelling at them. And then you have, again, back to the example of let's say you have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, a boy and girl, and they're fighting and things are getting out of hand. And the 7-year-old slaps the 5-year-old on the arm and the 5-year-old comes in crying to you. And maybe you're the youngest in your family and you remember being hit by your brother. So now you're really triggered because now you're like, oh, I'm a mama bear and I need to get that 5-year-old's back. That's bullshit. My kid's not hitting the other kid. And you go marching in and you peer over the 7-year-old and you're like, what are you doing? I told you we don't hit in this family. Okay. You're triggered and you're upset and you're judging, but you're also using violence to try to get your kid to stop using violence. And hopefully you can see the craziness in that. And I mean, this was my story. I was yelling at my kid. He was yelling at me. I was yelling at him for yelling at me. And at the same time, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, who taught him this? Where'd he learn this? Me? He learned it from me. I taught him. I was angry and reactive. And I said to him, showed him, in this family, when we're frustrated, we yell. And he was like, oh, okay, that's what we do. I'm frustrated with her. I'm going to yell. And then I was yelling at him for yelling at me, which now seems like, oh my goodness. Right? So kids don't do what we say ever. They do what we do. So I do want you, as part of the solution, to have a look at yourself and to say, what am I doing? Am I modeling the behavior? Am I modeling calmness during the storm? Because remember, I said again, storming child meets storming parent, explosion. What most parents want to have happen is they want the kid to stop storming. Kid's not going to stop storming. They don't have the brain capacity. No one's modeling it for them. They don't know how. It's not going to happen. It's not. Maybe when they're 23, it'll happen, or 35, but at 7, 9, 11, 14, 17, 20, it's not going to happen. So you have to come in calm and model a new behavior for them, even while they're storming. Don't wait till they stop storming. Come in and have a sense of calmness by not judging them, by getting curious, not furious, by going underneath the behavior to the feelings and needs, playing detective, not taking it personally. These are all the things you want to do, the tools to stay calm, so that while they're storming, you're modeling a sense of calm. That's how you go to bed at night feeling like an amazing parent. It's easy to go to bed at night and feel like an amazing parent when you've had a connected day, when everything's going well, when cooperation was at a maximum. I mean, you know, you spent the day at Disney, or you went shopping and got manicures and had a great lunch or whatever. But the real joy is when your kid has had a tough day, like right now, parenting during uncertain times. And you go to bed at night feeling like, man, I got their back. I supported them through it. I was calm. I figured out what they needed. I was able to stay calm while they were storming. I really played detective and went underneath and tried to figure out what was going on. I didn't worry about cleaning out that bathroom cabinet. I put my energy into raising my emotional intelligence and raising theirs during this time, so that at the other side of this thing, I'm more connected with my kids. And that means more to me than cookies or cleaning out a cabinet or, you know, doing an A+ job right now, right? I am going to use this time to be connected. That's certainly my goal. My goal is to come out the other end of this more connected to my son than ever, understanding him on a deeper level. And if my bathroom cabinet doesn't get cleaned out, I don't give a crap. Because I'm not valuing that. I'm valuing the opportunity to connect and hold space and get my son through this tough time. And just be there for him while he's storming. So while he's storming, I'm going to show up in a calm way. I'm going to model that for him so that he can see what it's like to go through this difficult time with a parent who can model calmness, because that's how he's going to learn. And what a beautiful skill, right? To take away into the world. Okay. Let's see. I would like to answer some questions or comments. I'm not sure. Let me see if I can find on my phone, because I'm not getting any of the, comments on my Facebook Live. But if you guys have some questions, let me see if I can figure out. Kathy, I don't know if you have any advice on how I do this. Okay, here we go. All right, I'm seeing them now. Yay! It's so hard to talk and do tech at the same time. I can't even tell you guys. Or I'm not good at it. Many of you may be, but this mama, it ain't her strength. All right, Becky said, any suggestions on how to explain, present this to dad who does believe there is manipulation and our boys are naughty? He's very old school. Oh, Becky, girl, I get you. I'm married to one of those myself. I think you just kind of got to let them listen to this. And it all has to do with how underdeveloped the kids' brains are. They just don't have the skills to identify. They don't have a prefrontal cortex fully developed yet. When, you know, they have all their other organs are developed, the organs just need to grow. But the brain actually needs to develop. And maybe you could come at it from that standpoint. And, you know, neuroscientists now are saying that the prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed until the age of 25. And it's really that prefrontal cortex that allows us to, like, get creative, see a couple steps ahead. In fact, most kids live in their middle brain, which is where the emotional center, it's where the storming takes place, 100% in their middle brain until the age of 7. So Becky, I'm going to think some more about that. And if I come up with a better answer for you, I will post it to you and tag you in it, because this comes up a lot. Moms are, you know, I'm not trying to stereotype, but moms often are ready to do this work. And dads are often dragging a little bit behind and sometimes dragging their knuckles. I will tell you, in this guide that I put together, Peaceful Parenting During Uncertain Times, that Kathy is going to, someone on the PNP team is going to put in the group. I have some really good articles in here. 4 tips to get your kids to feel their feelings is a good one, Becky, that might be helpful. And then I have one in here called Read This to Stress Less During Uncertain Times. And this might be a good one to pull some comments out for your husband and to help him a little bit. Yes, Melody, you can retrain older teens. The beauty of the work I do is that you, let me share this with you too. And if you all hear nothing I say, I want you to know that nothing's gone wrong. You haven't ruined your kids at any age. I mean, I have worked with parents. Right now, I have a full roster of one-on-one clients, and it goes the gamut from 2 to 20. I have actually worked with parents of adult children before, and a lot of kids in teens and college, and it is never too late, never, ever, ever too late to start modeling new behavior. And I will tell you, when you turn your family in a new trajectory like I have and like thousands of my clients have, you're not only investing in your parenting, but you're investing in how your children will parent their grandchildren. So it is never, ever, ever too late to do this work, I promise you. And I feel like with teenagers, sometimes there's a couple things I suggest with teenagers on how to sort of have a call to action. But teenagers oftentimes pick up on the modeling even faster than younger kids, because their prefrontal cortex is more advanced. And so, not to say that if you have a little kid, you need to wait, But teens, like, they get this stuff quickly. And I will say, children are very forgiving. They're very forgiving. I mean, I remember when I first started doing this work, you know, I learning about all this and studying, my son was just, he was so excited there was a new way in our house. He didn't care about the old way. And oftentimes, you know, when I work with my clients, you know, their kids will help hold them accountable. The kids will be like, "Mommy, you know, we're not doing that anymore." And it's just so sweet. I mean, kids just, they love the connection that's happening in the families. Okay. Kathy Stone said, "My 4-year-old seems to have a need to possess or control all the toys. She has a really hard time sharing. Can you explain what this need?" Yeah. So she might at 4 years old realize, 4 years old. So there's so much going on in brain development. And a lot of times our kids are like having realizations. Like, remember when your child was an infant and what, like, there's that phase where they just, they're just like, they're meatloaf with eyes and they're just smiling to smile, right? Because they're like flexing their muscles in their face. And then there's that moment where they look at you and maybe you sing to them or they hear your voice and they're connecting with you and they smile because they recognize you. Remember that? Okay, that's their brain developing. That's child development. Then other things start to happen. Like there's a point, I always think this is so cute. There's a point where kids think when you leave the room, you don't exist. And then there's that moment where they realize, okay, you're still alive. You're there. You're just not physically with them. There's also the moment, Kathy, where they start to realize that people possess things. Like, that is mine and that is hers. And so what your daughter might be going through is almost like a scarcity mentality where she thinks that if she doesn't have everything, that maybe it doesn't exist or it won't be around. It's almost like a form of autonomy. And so you can just work with her that even if something is not in her possession, it still exists and she can go get it anytime. It's almost like a peekaboo type thing, right? I mean, that's what peekaboo is. We're showing our kids like, I'm not there, and then I am, and they think it's fun, you know? And so you can talk with her in 4-year-old speak that toys still exist, and it's okay. You can calm down the fear that things maybe are going to go away and really help her understand that it's okay. She doesn't need to possess everything. I sort of think this may be the genesis of hoarding. You know, sometimes we have these things happen in our childhoods, and they sort of reappear later because no one helped us address the unmet need. Hope that helps. Emily Guzman said, for young kids, what about meltdowns from frustration? It seems to set off a 30-minute meltdown that gets even worse if I intervene. Yes. Sometimes when a meltdown is happening, if we intervene, it actually just re-agitates the storm. So I don't recommend intervening. I recommend just supporting them through it. Every kid has a different sort of length of rope for what the meltdown needs to be. And right now, meltdowns are happening regularly and sometimes for extended periods of time. So what I really recommend is just if you can support them through it. Oftentimes when I'm around someone who's melting down, my son included, I chant the mantra, "May the love in me rise up and meet the love in you." That's the translation of namaste, which I didn't know until about 10 years ago. And so to keep myself from judging or getting triggered or agitating or worried or impatient when my son is having a meltdown, especially when he was little, I don't do it so much now because now I'm playing detective. But Emily, when my son was 5 and a half like yours and he was having a meltdown, I would bring a loving energy by saying to him, to myself in my head, while gazing upon the meltdown, "May the love in me rise up and meet the love in you. May the love in," and I would chant it like this, "May the love in me rise up and meet the love in you. May the love in me rise up." And what would happen is I would be sending a very healing energy to him. And ironically, if you support your kids through the storm, right, as long as they're not like pulling hair or throwing plates across the room or kicking the dog, if you can support them through it when it's happening, then over time, they will feel the love and energy. The duration of the storm will start to lessen. What happens a lot of times is subconsciously they're feeling our resistance. And so they're wanting to battle the resistance, especially strong-willed kids, man. They really get caught up in this. And if we intervene, it's okay, don't do that, I'll make it better. It actually reignites the cortisol and starts the storm all over again. So all you want to do is just lovingly support them through it. And if you need to take breaks and walk away and leave them alone, you know, you could do that. And if they can handle it, storming on their own, just be there for them. Oh, Jennifer, you're so sweet. I know I could be with you for 10 hours, Jen. I love your posts on Facebook. Okay, Ruth said, how can we help little kids understand the isolation? I don't know that we can, and I don't know that we need to. I think we just help them get through day by day by day and maybe look for ways to make it interesting and you know, just isolation is a big word. So if I had little kids right now, I would be talking about this is just the phase in our life where we get to stay home or we have to stay home to protect everybody. And I think I would just keep it super simple and leave it at that. What I would want to know is what are they feeling behind it? It's not so much about explaining what's happening in the world. It's and Ruth, I don't know how old your kids are. If you want to post that, I'll see if I can find it. But I don't think it's so much about explaining what's happening out there. I think it's about asking what's going on in here. What are you needing? What are you feeling? What are your worries? Tell me more. Like what are you thinking about? I wouldn't even say the word worry. What are your thoughts, honey? Tell me more. Let's dig in. Let me help you. Because, you know, as Corinne teaches us, which is, you know, 100% true, the isolation is the circumstance. It's what are they thinking and feeling about it that's causing the upset rather than the isolation. And a lot of little kids, I don't even know that, you know, I think they feed more off of our stress. And again, the last thing I would say, Ruth, is what are we modeling? And again, this is hard to hear sometimes, but, you know, I ask myself this too a lot, is what are we modeling about the isolation? Because chances are if your kids are really, really little, they're picking up more on what you're modeling, your worries, your concerns. They're listening, talk to your friends or having the news on all the time or talking with your spouse about the news or, you know, being worried about things or being worried about finding toilet paper. My guess is when the kids are really, really little, they're picking up on what we're modeling for them more than they're coming up with their own original thoughts. So I think a really great step, Ruth, is to just pay attention to what am I modeling. You don't want to be too insincere, like, oh, everything's rainbows and unicorns. And right, we don't want to go there. We want to be sincere with our children because they snuff that crap out like, you know, like that. But I do think we really, really, really want to pay attention to what are we modeling for our children right now and make sure that we're modeling things that we want them to reflect back to us. So that's your homework assignment, Ruth, really. I hope that helps. So I'm going to stay for like 10 more minutes to answer questions that are on here. And just to recap, you know, the three things that I really want you to do are not take your kids' behavior personally, right? I beg you. I beg you to remember that they're having a hard time. They're not giving me a hard time. I want you to go underneath the behavior to the feelings and needs and become Columbo. Use the mantra, get curious, not furious. And I want you to question deeply, what am I modeling for my children? What am I showing them? How am I reacting during this uncertain time? How am I showing up? What am I teaching them? Because they're just reflecting back what we're showing them. And so that's really, really, really helpful. And then again, because I know some people probably have to drop off, I made this guide and Kathy, you know, the PNP team is going to make this available. I know Kathy's not going to do it because she's super busy, but the team is going to make this available. I'm not sure where or how they're going to do that, but I know it's going to be available to all of you. And I have more resources too that are available. You can reach out to me. So, okay. Emily says it starts with him getting frustrated with Lego or something. Yeah, he might be frustrated that he's not more adept, you know, that he doesn't have more autonomy in doing his Legos. Autonomy oftentimes is a really big deal for little kids. a really big deal, especially in a multi-child household. Autonomy can be a really big deal, especially like for a younger kid that wants to do everything that big siblings doing. Autonomy can lead to a lot of frustration. Jean was the person who has a college kid. She said, no storms, just taking action. I don't want to nag, but damn, I want to see keeps Dean's list. So talk with them about it, Jean. Be honest about where some of your storming might come from, that you have anxiety, that you're, you know, that you're concerned, that you're eager for him to continue this goal, and have an open conversation about it. You'd be surprised the productivity that will come from that. Okay, let's see. Well done, Jean. Jean said her mom was a yeller and she broke the family tradition. Yes, good job. Let's see. Okay, I think I answered. Did I answer everything? I think I did. If anybody else, last call, if someone else wants to put a comment or a question in here for me, yes, we'll get the cheat sheet. We'll get the cheat sheet and I will put my notes in the Facebook Live of the three things that I want you to focus on and do. And it was a pleasure, an absolute pleasure to be here with you all today. Probably the highlight of my week, to be honest with you. Although I am teaching a free class on Thursday, so that might be the highlight of my week also. But it's just, I'm honored to be here and I'm honored to give back to everybody. I learned so much from all of you in your posts and in your support of each other. You've all really taught me what sisterhood looks like. I'm an only child. I have an only child. And you guys have taught me so much about what it looks like to have each other's backs and to show up and to pick yourself up after a fall and to keep going and to experience success. And so I have goosebumps just talking about this. So the real value for me today was to get to come here and share what I know works and hopefully inspire or help even a few of you. And it has just been like a dream come true, really, honestly, a dream come true to come and give back to this amazing tribe that makes up the PNP people. And so I'm honored to do it. And if I can help in any way, please reach out to me. I'm here for everybody. All right. So have a great day. And I'll see you guys soon. Take care. Bye.